Welcome back to Paths to Purpose. Thanks for joining us this week. We're really excited for this week's episode because it has been a long time coming. We are going to be chatting with Mikey today, who has agreed graciously to be in the hot seat to reflect on her journey in college and afterwards. And Mikey, I'm so glad that you have allowed us to rapid fire you with questions today. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I'm excited. It has been a long time coming.
Yes, we've been trying to schedule this forever. And so we're really excited. Alan's also here with us. Alan, how are you?
I'm doing well. And I want to say thank you to Mikey for joining us and offering your narrative.
We'll eventually maybe get Jack also so that everyone will know everyone's backstories, because now I've done my backstory, Alan's done his backstory, now we're going to have Mikey, so the whole team. Anyway, okay, well, let's get into it. Mikey, why don't we start by talking about your background in general? So, like, where are you from originally? How did you decide to go to Ithaca College? What was your journey like on that whole process, and why did you end up there?
Yeah, okay, so I'm from Western New York, go Bills, and I definitely, when I was young and like in high school and even in middle school, like I was just a very involved person, like always doing different things. I was a dancer for 19 years. I'm calling myself retired now. And so then when I got to high school, it was kind of like I bounced around a lot in what I wanted to do. So I always really loved the law. And I thought from middle school on that I was going to go to law school. And then I had like a stint of, oh, the med field seems really interesting. And then I kind of decided that that wasn't for me. So even in my senior year of high school, I remember just being like, not even stressed about it, but just like, yeah, I'm going to do this thing. And then the next day, like, no, I'm going to do this. And so I actually applied to all of my colleges as biochem. I only applied to 4 schools. All of them were big. All of them were huge universities. And the only small school that I applied to was Ithaca College. And the only reason that I applied to Ithaca College was because I also applied to Cornell. I was like, well, this school's in Ithaca too. I was familiar with Ithaca because that's where my godparents lived for a long period of time. And so I was like, you want to know what? Let me just add Ithaca College. Why not? Like, have a small school in there. And I think an unfortunate part, which maybe a lot of people don't go through, is that I was very alone in the college decision process. There were many different people of all different relations that just unfortunately did not show up, whether that's like parents or college advisors at school and that kind of stuff. I was very much alone in the college application and decision-making process. So I think that that did have a big effect on me because there wasn't opportunity to go and tour these schools. And I was just like, yeah, like Syracuse is good for X, Y, and Z. Like, let me apply to there. Cornell is good for X, Y, and Z. Like, I'll apply to there without ever really being familiar with what the culture at these schools was really like. And so back to, you know, going through this kind of alone in November of my senior year of high school, that's when I decided I didn't want to go into med anymore. And I was like, well, crap. I applied to all my schools as biochem. So I had to go back and reach out to all of the schools. I mean, there was 4 of them, but I had to reach out to all of the schools and be like, hi, I'd like to change my major that I'm applying under. And luckily, like that all went through and everything. So I was in the running for everywhere. And then like fast forward to April of my senior year, I got all of my acceptance letters and it was like, okay, so where am I going to go? And I asked my mom, I was like, will you take me to Ithaca College? Like they have a welcome students day. Like they just had like an open admissions day. And so she was like, yeah, we'll go. And I did a tour. I was the only senior on the tour. Like the rest of the kids were like sophomores and juniors, but I immediately like fell in love with the campus. And like, I fell in love with what it had to offer. It doesn't hurt that Ithaca is a beautiful place, but it was kind of right there. I was like, yep, this is the school I'm going to go to. And that, and my mom was like, yeah, I can see it. You would fit in here like really well. And then of course came the whole like, oh, well, Ithaca is a private school. Let's figure out the finances on that one, which we could get into a different day. So yeah, that's how I ended up at Ithaca College. It was kind of like I stumbled into it and it was like a happy accident of me just being like, yeah, I'm going to apply to the school. Like, let's see what happens. And I'm really glad I had a really big sense of community at Ithaca, which was great. And that's something that I didn't really know that I needed.
Let's back up just a little bit and let's talk more about what you said, which I thought was interesting and I think probably quite relatable, which is that you felt really alone in the college decision process. And I feel like that's something that regardless if you're lacking in support from, you know, parents, friends, college counselors, whoever you feel like you're lacking the support from, I feel like that can be a very isolating process, like you said. And I am curious to know how you coped with that and what did you do during that time? Because that's a hard thing to be going through. You have this major life change coming. And I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So from what I recollect, I was like unfazed. I like to call myself like type A minus because I'm like pretty particular, but I don't know when to let go, but I can confront letting go a lot easier than other type A people. So to me, it was just very natural of being like, yeah, okay, I need to apply to school. Like, let's do it. Like, let's just figure out where I want to go. And I think at that point too, you know, my mom like raised me in a very, you are your own person. Like you're going to do what you want to do. And she was like, you know yourself better than anybody else does. So like, who am I to tell you like that you should be a doctor, you should be a lawyer? Like I could have said to her, I want to go to fine art school and like be a painter. She would have been like, okay, sounds good. So I think that combined with just my drive for getting shit done, it left me unfazed. I was like, yeah, I'm like researching schools and applying to them and like trying to get application waivers and stuff. And it honestly really wasn't until I got to college and was hearing about how we all ended up in the same place of it being like, oh, so some people had people to like take them on tours and like really sit down with them and invest the time of being like, why do you want to go here? What is the draw for that? And so I think it was to me just a matter of life. And I was definitely stressed at the end because especially like trying to figure out the finances of going to Ithaca College, like getting scholarships and all of that kind of stuff. That's when I was stressed. And I definitely remember there being a point of resentment at the very end. Like I did not commit to Ithaca College until like the decision day, like at 7:30 in the morning. I signed the papers and like sent in the deposit. But the weeks in between when I toured Ithaca College and when I actually committed, it was like probably 2 weeks. So I was like really down to the wire here. And I remember having a lot of resentment at that time because there were people in all different directions trying to tell me that I could not go there. And I was honestly like, screw you. If you didn't want me to go here, or if this was not a viable option, you should have told me that 8 months ago when I was applying to schools. And I know that that period of time, I was mad. I was very upset because I was like, I have worked so hard my entire life to get in, to get these scholarships. And it was just like heartbreaking, but I made it work.
So Mikey, if I can, I wanted to follow up on a little bit of what you just said, because one of the interesting things that I'm hearing from your narrative is this notion around getting advice and the ability to have a sounding board. But one of the interesting dilemmas I see with people who are making these very difficult decisions is that some of the people who are in their sounding boards are actually giving bad advice. And one of the benefits of you doing it sort of by yourself is that you were able to internalize your own feelings more than others might. And I heard a little bit of the influence of people telling you no at the end, which can be the negative issue about getting advice from people in your community. So I guess I was going to ask you, How did you get advice from people who understood you through this process? And now that you've done this process pretty much independently, how do you feel about where it took you? Did it align with you? Are you comfortable with the outcome of it? Because you basically chose it by yourself.
In terms of finding advice or searching for it or listening to it, I think that the people to gravitate towards are the ones that aren't giving unsolicited advice. And I know that that's really hard because everybody, like I do it too. I give unsolicited advice all day long and everybody has opinions about everything. But I've had a mentor in my life since I was young. They're a family friend and she's like the most badass woman I have ever met. And she has made a lot of decisions on her own and just been in the position of like, I have to prioritize myself for X, Y, and Z reasons. And I think that from a young age, she was like one of the people that it was like, okay, I'm actually going to listen to what you have to say, because she would ask me first, like just a very broad, like, how are you doing? Like, what's going on lately? And we would get into it. And she's an attorney. She's in law. And so she was definitely like one of those guiding points in my life when I was like, I'm going to law school. And she was like, I support that. Like, I'm here. But she would also talk to me about a lot of other things, like personal relationships. And she gave me such great advice that I could see the point of view that she was coming from, where she was like, I gain nothing from giving you this advice. I gain absolutely nothing. This advice is going to affect your life. And she would always be like, take it with a grain of salt. Take what I'm saying and think about it, because I have a skewed perspective based on my interpersonal relations and the way that my life has gone. And so that to me was really helpful. And she's still like one of the best people in my life. And even when I didn't want to go to law school anymore, she was like, okay, so you figured it out. That's great. You figured it out before you spent $300,000 on getting a law school like education.
I have pain.
And she still supported me. And there are definitely people in my life where when I stopped doing the thing that they thought that I should do, they still hold it against me. And like, luckily, I feel like, and I've been told this a lot, like, oh, you're way older than your years. And I'm like, well, because I've had to live through a few things, okay? Like, I know when I'm going to get burned. Sorry, I'm being so vague right now. But it's just like when it comes to advice, being able to see when people are acting on their own interests, like I still have people and family members that are like, so I'm still waiting for the day that you're going to go to law school. And I'm like, sis, it's not happening. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not doing that. And if I want to, like, then that's great. But I made that decision. And I think another avenue that I have gotten advice from are building the relationships and friendships. So, you know, my mentor, I do consider her a friend, but the friendships of people who are going through the same things at the same time as me, so friends closer to my age, that's been really important. And one of my best friends, she helped me in the middle of college realize that I wanted to change my path and that I wasn't happy.
So just following up, are you happy with the outcome? Because you sort of navigated by yourself. And now that you're through the journey, are you comfortable with where you are?
Oh, I've never been this happy in my life, which we could also get into the mental health aspect of it. But long story short, at Ithaca College, I ended up adding a major. I went in as politics. Halfway through, right at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, I have been miserable lately and I can't figure out why. Like, I like my classes, but they're not giving what I want them to give. And so I talked with one of my very best friends who was in the Park School of Communications, and we literally sat down and we like went through it. And she helped me see that adding the television and digital media major was what I was really wanting. And it was a tough 2 years after the pandemic of like, I am finishing 2 degrees and a minor, and I started 1 degree from scratch as a junior in college. But I was just so motivated by finding something that I actually cared about. So I'm so happy. I am so grateful that I found this path. And there's a lot of like, what ifs. There's a very well-known Park scholarship, which basically pays for your full ride. And maybe if I had had the guidance beforehand that, oh, hey, Ithaca College also offers this major and you really like doing that kind of stuff, you could apply for this major and apply for this scholarship and get your entire college education paid for. That is a what if, but I can't dwell on that because I've graduated. I graduated pretty high in my class and I found a job and I'm happy and I'm so happy with everything that's happened at Ithaca.
Yeah, Alan's clapping for those that you can't see us, but I'm happy to hear that. And I do want to go back to the mental health part because I'm thinking back to the episode that we taped with Brianna Goodlin, and Brianna talked about how her classmates at Harvard had spent 4 years getting ahead and she spent 4 years catching up. And I remember us debriefing that afterwards and talking about that. And I do want to ask you about that because I know that you've shared with us a little bit about how, because you had to navigate a lot of this yourself and you didn't have that same starting point as other people, that that was a challenge. And so I do want to ask you about that and how that felt. And obviously you've come out the other side and now you're a little bit removed from having to go through college with that lens. But I do want to talk about that specifically, if you're comfortable with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the starting point is really like, so that everybody understands, I have struggled with mental health like my entire life. And when I mean my entire life, like I vividly remember, which I don't have many memories because of my mental health, but I vividly remember in fifth grade discovering the word depression. I literally was like sitting at a computer and I was like, why am I sad all the time? As like a 9-year-old, I'm like doing this. I was like, depression. And I like started to look it up a little bit more. Meanwhile, the probably like IT administrator on these like computers at school are like, what is going on? But I'm like, like, okay, that should have been a red flag, everyone. Like, why did nobody come get me? But anyway, like from literally like elementary school, I knew that something was up with me. Like something was not good. And that in and of itself was really hard to cope with. And I went without treatment for over a decade. And there had been a few times where I was very much struggling with depression and anxiety. And it took me longer to figure out what anxiety was, but like trigger warning, like I was suicidal for like at least 10 to 12 years of my life. And as you know, like as a lot of people know, when you're a young person, and like by young, I mean like you're not even a teenager. And when you try to communicate those feelings to other people, that in and of itself is very difficult. But it's also very difficult when you come from a community and a background where mental health is not acknowledged and it doesn't exist. And so there had been a few times where like I inquired, I was like, can I go to therapy? Like, I think something's wrong with me. And the answer was no. And that also has to do with like the access to healthcare because it is, you know, expensive. And that was one of the reasons why it was like, no, it's too expensive. No, you don't need that. And so that happened a few times in my life. And as a lot of people know, again, that once you get the first no, it takes you longer to speak up again. And then after that, no, it takes even longer again. And so by the time I hit high school, I don't even know how I was coping, like, but I was, and I was very unwell. And I think it's also really hard because then when you, at least all of my friends in high school were also some form of depressed or had some like mental health issues. And that was kind of just like an echo chamber of, you can't seek help. We can just kind of suffer in together because we're all at the will of our parents and we're all teenagers and that kind of stuff. And then I hit a breaking point. Once again, my senior year of high school, and this I also vividly remember, somebody had sent me a scholarship. They were like, this is due tomorrow, but you should apply for this. And me being the person that I am, I was like, okay, I have to apply for this. And so I just remember like I was running around for like a day and a half trying to get all this stuff together, like writing the essays. And I remember that I was like walking down the hallway at school going back to the library to like try to submit the application, and the application like wasn't submitting. And I was like, fuck, like I did everything. And I literally like, I quite literally lost my shit. Like I lost my shit. I had a full on breakdown in the middle of the hallway. Like it started just crying, and then I was hyperventilating, and then like I literally blacked out. And I went to like a kind of small school where like everybody knows each other, like, and everybody's pretty friendly, and people started seeing me, and like they got my friends, and like it just started like escalating so quick. And then like all of a sudden, like they took me to the bathroom, they put me in the corner, like up against the wall, and were like trying to get me to breathe, and I like blacked out. I have one of my compulsions is to itch when I'm flustered, when I'm anxious, and when I'm upset. And I was bleeding down my neck from how hard I was scratching myself, and like just like blacked out. So that was super fun. And eventually somebody, it was like right at the end of the school day too. And so like somebody went and got my like guidance counselor, and there's like 3 guidance counselors for the whole school. So like she knows who I am, but like I was never one of the kids that like went and talked or anything. And like she sat me down and she was like, what the hell is going on? And I like told her the abridged version of like, I'm not well, like I need help. And she was like, I have to call your parents. And I was like, come on, man, are you kidding me? Like, just let me go home, whatever. And so she called my parents, and she was basically like, the school is mandating that you like need to send your daughter to therapy. Like she needs to go see a counselor. Like we cannot help her here. We will send you the resources, like you need to send her to someone. And so that's when I started my first therapy journey, which was not good. We could do a whole episode on that. It was not good, but that was really hard, especially being, you know, like 17 years old at the time. And like, I have tried as many times as I could to reach out for help. And then like, it kind of not being sprung on me, but having my parents be like backed into a corner of being like, okay, now we have to do this, which is just kind of like the way that my family operates in general, is like, we don't fix things until they're completely broken. And like, there I was in the bathroom, like broken. And so like, that was definitely like a whole journey in and of itself. And it unfortunately came to a pretty quick end, because then I went off to college, and that was hard.
I was going to ask, did it end? Does it ever end? And what have you learned from that whole experience that you're now using for self-care?
Absolutely. So yeah, of course it didn't end. One of the recommendations from my therapist at the time, so back when I was 17, after like 2 months, she was like, clearly this is something than us just like chatting. And I was like, yeah, I thought so. And so she recommended that I go to the psychiatrist that they work with and have an evaluation done. And my mom was like, okay, fine, we'll do that. And so I went, and the psychiatrist was like, you should be medicated. And at the time I was 17, so I could not, it's not something that I could choose to do on my own. And at the time my mother was like, no, you will not be medicating yourself. You just need to learn how to cope better. And like, mind you, like I ate healthy. Like I was a healthy eater. I exercised 7 times a day. Like I was a dancer. I was always in rehearsals. I went to school every day. I always did my homework. I was involved in like 12 different activities. I was like, what else? Like other than probably a lack of sleep, like there is nothing that I am doing wrong. We are just at that point. And so I went off to college, and it took me another 2 years to reach out to someone again. And I was struggling then, but it was also kind of at that period of life where I was like, holy crap, I got out of my hometown. Like, this is great. Like, I'm having fun. So I was like able to cope a little bit better then, like just being in charge of myself a little bit more. And you know, if I didn't want to go home, I didn't have to, and that kind of thing. And then really the first summer of the pandemic. So what is this? This is the summer of 2020. It was actually like in a year making, but I developed an eating disorder. And the summer of 2020, was when it really reached another high point of like, of course, my natural brain chemistry is like off balance. But when you combine that with trigger warning, like starving yourself, like I was blacking out on stairs. I was like, it also didn't help that I had an internship at the time and I was house sitting for someone the whole summer where my internship was. So I was alone in this ginormous house day in and day out, clearly going through it. But I was like, there were times where I would like just stand in the middle of the house and like scream. I would just scream or like doing other like self-harm things. And I was like, okay, this is not good. I cannot be doing this. But of course, when you're at your lowest, it's the most hard to reach out to somebody. And I'm like giving really personal information here. And I don't even care because I feel like this is something that might resonate with people. But basically, at that time, I was like, I have really shitty health insurance. I'm like living in a place that my health insurance doesn't really cover, like I'm out of region or whatever. And I convinced myself that I had like PCOS because starving yourself means your periods get irregular a lot. So I took myself to Planned Parenthood. I was like, I'm going to go get this situated. I'm going to go to Planned Parenthood and I'm going to figure this out. And so they look at me and they start talking with me and they're like, girl, you don't have PCOS. Like, you have an eating disorder. And I was like, now, why'd you have to go and say that? Like, why'd you have to say that out loud? But they were so right. They were so right. And like, I was like crying and they were like, are you okay? And I was like, no. And they were like, what is going on? And I'm like, I'm really depressed and I have been for a really long time. And now I like have an eating disorder. And they were like, they were so great. Like they gave me a bunch of resources of like people that I can see and everything. But that was like, I had a month left in the city that I was in. And I just felt really defeated after that. I was like, once again, I am the ripe age of 19. Like I have to call all these doctors and try to figure out if they take my health insurance, which I have really shitty health insurance and I have like a $5,000 deductible. And it was too much. It was too much. So I went on.
So I have many directions that I feel like we could go. But I want to say first that a lot of what you're saying resonates with me, particularly in the sense that I've felt in my life the force of needing to be perfect all the time. And that really manifesting into unhealthy coping mechanisms and also the not being able to ask for help because of that. What I'm hearing from you is there's a lot going on in your life during this time. But on top of that, like you're dancing, you're eating healthy, you're trying to do everything right. Because in a sense, it's like if you do everything right, then maybe everything will be fixed. And that really resonates with me because I think that that's something that I have tried to do for most of my life is like, if I just do these things right, then people will like me. I won't have these issues that I have with myself, all of this. And that is just such bullshit that we tell ourselves. But I think it's just something that hits me so deep because it's such a struggle to constantly be trying to feel like if I just do this one more thing, then maybe everything will be fixed. And I think hitting a breaking point is kind of terrible. And I don't want to say wonderful because it's obviously terrible, but like you hit that point and you're like, oh my gosh, it's kind of like a clarity point of something has to change because me being perfect isn't going to solve this. And I think that that's something that I've heard from a lot of my female friends and this like pressure. So one, I just wanted to say that and that it just really resonates with me. But then the other thing that I wanted to say was you having to do all of this on your own while you're simultaneously struggling so hard. So after you ended up going to Planned Parenthood, which shout out to Planned Parenthood, we love you. How did you end up getting help after that? And was that really the point that you were like, okay, I can't do this anymore? Leaving aside all the challenges that you just said of like the healthcare and all of that could be an entire other episode of young people dealing with healthcare. But how did you get to where you are now from there?
Yeah, it took me over another year to reach out again. So that was right before my junior year of college. So fast forward a year, I started my senior year of college and I had been managing pretty well that year. Like I had no really, really low point. But the start of my senior year, I was like, oh, I feel it brewing. Like, I don't know if it's going to be next week or like in 3 months from now, but like I can feel it starting to crack down. And so that's when around like October of my senior year, I reached out. So like a year ago, wow, like a year ago, give or take, I reached out to the free counseling like services at my college. And I immediately got into sessions. And I would really like to shout out CAPS at Ithaca College. I know people have had varying experiences with them, but my psychologist there, she was absolutely amazing. And she saw it from our first intake. Like she was like, you're dealing with a lot, like a lot is going on here. And so first we started twice a week just because of where I was at mentally. And it was going downhill very fast. But I think the only reason why I was able to reach out is because I wasn't at the bottom. I did not hit rock bottom yet. And I was telling myself, I was like, you have been here too many times before. And that's what I told her in the first session. I was like, I am not at my worst right now, but I'm about to be. And she was like, I'm so glad that you're here. Like, thank you for coming. And so that like started and we had our sessions for like 2 months and those were really hard. I was really not in a good place. I was being my type A minus. I was like, there were so many people that I didn't want to let down because I was in a lot of positions of leadership and just very involved in things. And I enjoyed doing those things. I love being a busy person. I loved every single extracurricular that I was involved in, but it did serve as a, like, I cannot stop. Like, I cannot stop to take a rest. And, you know, after 2 months of sessions with my counselor, she was like, so I asked you like in one of our first sessions, like, have you ever been medicated? Have you ever considered being medicated? And I remember in one of those first sessions, I was like, I've never been, and I think that I really need it, but an aversion to medication has been instilled in me that I've been told that it's going to change who I am and it's going to make me a different person and it's going to make me into a person that I don't like and I'm not going to be able to recognize myself. And I told her, I said, I know that those things aren't true, but I've been told it so many times that I'm scared that there's a possibility. And she was like, okay. So then fast forward the few months and she's like, I think that you should, even if you don't want to be medicated, I think that you should do an intake with our psychiatrist. And I was like, okay, I can do that. And that was once again, one of those like hour and a half sessions where it was another woman. She was like, tell me everything. And I was like, before I even said a word, like I just started crying because I don't cry a lot. And so like, to me, crying is like a very big release. Like if you see tears coming out of me, it's like, oh shit, like some shit has been going down. And like, I told her like absolutely everything. And that was the day that we decided that I was going to start an SSRI. That was scary. And I didn't tell anybody. For the longest time, the only person that I told was my partner. And even he was like, because he had never really dealt with mental health, mental illness. And even he was like, what? We had to really like sit down and like talk about it. And he did a lot of work researching it, of coming back and being like, okay, like I understand. But there was definitely fear from him of being like, are you about to become somebody that I don't know? I was kind of like, I am somebody that you don't know right now. Like, this is not me. I've been ill my entire life. So like, for people to feel like they truly know me, I'm like, well, you know, like the one that's really sick. Yeah, like they combat it with comedy. Like I make fun of myself a lot and I joke about it a lot. But I was like, this is not me. Like I am not living my best life right now. Like, and I haven't, I don't even know what that is. And so I started taking an SSRI and fast forward a year or so now, I have not looked back. It has truly been one of the best things for me. And it just goes to show that my entire life, I was not the problem. Don't fix me. Like, there's no tinkering with me. Like, oh, maybe you should get more sleep. Maybe you should. I'm a vegetarian. Like, I eat a ton of vegetables every day. Like, I'm getting all of my nutrients. Like, my iron levels are fine. I eat a lot of spinach, like, and that kind of stuff. And it was just kind of like a moment when it started working. It wasn't this like, aha, wake up one day and I'm like, oh, I'm fucking like the happiest woman alive. But it was like a gradual thing of like, I don't want to kill myself anymore.
I'm with Danielle. There's so much to unpack here that we're going to need to do two more episodes with you. But if I can make some observational patterns, I think if I can characterize what I heard, it's what I think allowed you to help yourself was first deep awareness of self. And you even articulated it like, I knew something was coming up and you were able to sense it. And then you were able to communicate a need for help to people who seemed willing to help. Whether it was Planned Parenthood or whether it was CAPS, you did reach out, even though you were hesitant to reach out because you'd been burned reaching out prior. So one of the lessons I think I heard was identify those who can help you and reach out to them once you sense something is wrong. And then another thing is identify the resources that don't appear to be available to you because you were constrained by resources to get access to the healthcare you needed, but there are resources available if you really find creative avenues and other people can help you find those resources. So that's kind of what I heard from the message from you. And it is genuinely courageous, your story, honestly. I wanted to ask you briefly, because I know we're hitting a time limit, how did you come to this podcast and what do you think the value is? I mean, here you are sharing in the podcast, like what's this for you?
Yeah, so I came to the podcast in February of 2022, and I really was just like so motivated by what the messaging was and what Alan and Danielle were doing. But I think a huge thing that I want to make sure gets across, I could not have reached a new level of motivation without addressing my mental health. Like, I had a newfound desire to do things and not just a like, I need to do this because of X, Y, and Z, but I need to do this because I want to do this. And that's like definitely how I found the podcast. But I think what I want this episode to mean for the podcast and for the listeners is that there are barriers to finding your purpose. And it's not even your purpose has to be some like super meta thing of like, I'm going to end world hunger and I'm going to X, Y, and Z, whatever. I say that a lot, apparently. I'm noticing now. First and foremost, your purpose is to just have a life on this earth. Like, you're just here and like, you don't have to do anything. And for the subset of people who are in such a unfortunate headspace where that doesn't even seem fathomable of like, I'm just here to live when it's like, I don't want to live. Like, why am I here? I don't want to be here. That is the first step of being like, I'm here. What are we going to do with it? Instead of being like, I'm here. How am I going to take myself away from here? That's just something that I want to get across the board of like, your purpose does not have to be this grand thing. Your purpose can be, I'm going to wake up every day and like at least be content or can at least face life, whatever that may be. But I think once you reach that point, which I did a little while ago, is now I'm like, I have the mental capacity and the drive to do more. Like, I am ready to do more. I'm ready to tackle the world. I have things that I want to do. Like, of course I want to end world hunger. Do I think that's my strong suit? No, but I want to work with other people who can like support that. Or I want to like I know that I'm capable of making a name for myself. And it's not even about making a name, but making things that mean things to other people. I just want to like make things that resonate with other people. And for me, that's in a lot of forms media, but the impact that that has is quite large. And I don't think that I would be able to do that and have a drive if I did not accomplish that first step of being like, your life has purpose. Like, you are not meaningless. And I know that it gets into a lot of meta things of like, what are we doing here? And where do we go after this? Like, okay, screw that. Throw that out the window. If you can take it one day at a time, like, all the more power to you. That's all you need. And if there's anything that people are taking away from this episode, if you feel like mentally you are not in a headspace to even just wake up and be like, what do I need to do today? Even as simple as like, I need to eat today. Like, I don't even care if you rot in your bed, but you need to eat. Like, there are so many people that struggle with that. And once you can cope with that and figure out what is stopping you from being able to do that, then the world is yours.
I have been over here crying. So I've definitely struggled with mental health too, and we don't have time to get into that on top of all this episode, but hearing you say that just, it makes me emotional. It does, because I think as someone who has struggled with that, this big thing of what does my life mean and why am I here, and I'm going to get emotional again. I just think that that's really beautiful. And I think that it's such a privilege that we get to hear your story and your journey. And thank you for sharing it with us, because I'm crying. So yeah, I'm looking at Jack on the screen because Jack and I have been over here, like, as you've been talking, like wiping our eyes. So yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say that I would not have been able to be this vulnerable if I hadn't gotten help. If I had never gotten help, I would still be suffering in silence. And because I got that help, I'm able to reflect on it without spiraling. So definitely there is a link there of my ability to be vulnerable is very dependent on this journey as a whole.
Can we add a to be continued, like, ending to this?
Yeah, I would love to bring more mental health content to the podcast and like talk about these things. So definitely to be continued. There will be a part two at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for today, we're going to wrap here. Mikey, we love you. Thank you for sharing your story with us. And it's just, it feels like such a privilege to have had this opportunity to really learn more about your journey and just for you being vulnerable with us. So thank you for that gift. And for everyone listening, yeah, we'll come back. And that's it for today. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. This episode was made possible by our audio engineer, Jack Booth, and our growth strategist, Mikey Lulo. For more resources and inspiration on finding your purpose, check out our Instagram @PathsToPurposePod. We'll see you next time. Bye.